When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to a special crossover episode of MLive's Wolverine and Spartan Confidential Podcasts. I'm Ryan Zook.
I'm Aaron McMahon.
I'm Matt Wenzel.
Happy Thursday to you guys, as we're just 2 days away from Saturday's rivalry game under the lights at Spartan Stadium. And we have a lot to cover on today's pod, including breaking down the matchup and discussing the fallout from last year's tunnel incident. But I wanted to start here. I don't know about you guys, but there just seems to be a different vibe around rivalry week this year. I mean, it's crazy to think that at this time last or 2 years ago, we were preparing for a top 10 matchup in East Lansing that ended up being one of the most exciting games in series history. And this year, it just doesn't seem to be much build up into Saturday. I mean, what's your guys' take on that so far?
I agree. I think it more has to do with the Michigan State side, and we'll let Matt get into that here in a minute. But obviously, the Wolverines are rolling. Michigan State is not. And I think for this rivalry to be like completely juiced, you need both sides at least at the same level, whether they're both good or both bad, so you can kind of have the back and forth of the fan base. And you're right, I agree. I haven't felt it this week either.
Yeah, it's the reason, like you said, it's obviously more on the Michigan State side of things. Michigan looking for a third straight Big Ten title, third straight playoff trip, obvious national title contender. Michigan State is the complete opposite of that right now. There's been nothing but turmoil basically this fall, with Mel Tucker being fired and, you know, Harlan Barnett taking over the program in impossible circumstances, and they've lost four straight. So, the first night game in the rivalry at Spartan Stadium, they're apparently going to wear their new black uniforms. But, yeah, there's no real juice from the Michigan State fan base right now, it feels like.
On that note, too, I'm real curious to see what the makeup of the crowd's going to be Saturday night at Spartan Stadium, right? Like, I was checking before we went live on you know, to record this, and you know, you get tickets for under $100 at Spartan Stadium. So I'm assuming, given Michigan's seasons they've had, there's going to be quite a few Michigan fans in attendance. I don't know what Michigan State fans are thinking in terms of, you know, whether they're choosing to sell their season tickets or whatever the case may be. But I got to think the crowds would be a little more even than I think under normal circumstances would be.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that this is, you know, it's been trending in this direction, obviously, with the way things have been going for Michigan State. I just personally think maybe Michigan State basketball having a free scrimmage open to the public Saturday afternoon is a little carrot Tom Izzo's dangling in front of the fan base saying, why don't you still show up? So I don't know how much that's going to help, but yeah, I would expect to see, you know, a decent number of U of M fans in the crowd, and for good reason.
All right, yeah, let's get into more of this 23 matchup. I mean, Michigan is 7-0, winning all games by more than 24 points and boasting the number one scoring defense, has a top 10 scoring offense. Like Matt said, MSU has lost four straight, all under interim head coach Harlan Barnett, and is coming off a disastrous fourth quarter versus Rutgers where they blew an 18-point lead. I mean, on paper, this looks like a game destined to be a blowout. But, Matt, we'll start with you. Is there anything you've seen from MSU in recent weeks or heard from the team this week that makes you believe that this could end up being a close game?
You know, I'll give credit to Kyle Austin, our Michigan State basketball beat writer. You go back 7 years, because the spread right now is 24.5. You go back 7 years, it was 24.5. They were going into Spartan Stadium rolling. Michigan State was, you know, had to do a 3-9 season. You know, everything had gone wrong for them, basically. And we're doing the picks, and Kyle was the MSU football beat writer at the time, and I was kind of helping on the UM side. But everybody does the picks, and everybody picks a blowout except for Kyle. And he's like, you know, just don't – you never know. You know, this game will always be close. And I'll tell you what, the final score is a bit misleading. But, yeah, I mean, it was closer than anticipated. How Michigan State stays in this game, there's a lot of ways, but it's going to take – the best effort of the year, positives you've seen recently. Since getting absolutely torched by Michael Penix Jr. to the tune of 713 yards, a program record allowed, which to be fair, that was about as bad of a matchup as Michigan State could have found in the country. And Washington is a hell of a team. And everybody has a hard time stopping them, but the defense has been better. The turnovers that have killed them, the defense has been put in tough spots, but they have shown some fight, obviously, in recent weeks. And it's just kind of the same old thing. They just can't get out of their own way. This team should easily be 4-2. Outside shot, of 5-1. You know, they, after getting crushed by Washington, they finished with more first downs, yards of total offense, and time of possession against Maryland and Iowa. Maryland game, they were down 21-0 early because of turnovers. So, but still, they had a chance to pull within a score with 6 minutes to go in the game. Iowa, they led in the fourth quarter. They should have had a couple touchdown lead at halftime. And again, turnovers, and then you collapse there. And then Maryland, or Rutgers, I'm sorry. I don't know what to say. Like, you're up 18. Early fourth quarter, everything is going your way. It's pouring rain, and you fumble a penalty, makes you retry a punt, snap gets fumbled, recovered in the end zone, for a touchdown, a kickoff isn't fielded. Rutgers recover. It's just, calamity. They ran seven offensive plays in the fourth quarter, I believe, after having the lead. So they just can't get out of their own way. Again, they're still showing up. Everybody's saying the right things. This team's bought in. Everybody's committed and all that. But the results on the field, they just – too many self-inflicted wounds.
How much do you think maybe that could be attributed to all the off-the-field issues that have gone on this year and then the coaching change? And, it's just a lot of outside noise that has been surrounding this program all season.
Yeah, there's obviously the players are, these are 18 to 23-year-olds for the most part. The coaches are in an unfortunate position. They're all, it's a lame duck staff. Everybody's facing challenges. So, there is something to that. But at the same time, discipline has been the word for like a month. And it isn't changing. This team has more turnovers than all but two teams in the country. They have 15. They're one of the most penalized teams in the country. And talent-wise, they got some guys, obviously, but the margin for error is very thin, and they are not going to be successful any week where they keep committing these errors.
No, for sure. And Aaron, obviously, we've been around the Michigan team all season, and the players just seem to be oozing confidence and more so by the week. What are your takeaways from this week's interviews as the team looks to win its second straight over its in-state rival?
Yeah, it's basically just the opposite, right? Michigan's been as disciplined and like mistake-free of a team as you can get, right? I think that's four games in a row now. They haven't had a turnover. They've had very few penalties this season. They're rolling over these Big Ten opponents. Some of these spreads have been large, and they've been able to beat them. So we've talked about this for weeks now. Michigan's beating up on bad teams. The Big Ten, largely, aside from obviously Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, is a bad conference. So I guess we don't know how good this Michigan team is, but they've really handled themselves well. Even some of the computer-adjusted ratings, they're number one in the country. We'll see. But they're playing as well as you'd expect right now. And it's gotten to the point now where Jim Harbaugh is like shouting out the assistant coaches and praising the parents and everything else, because he has nothing else to say because his team has been playing so well. It is a rivalry game. And we talk about this all the time. You throw the records out and everything else. So I think there's some of that, obviously, guarding against that this week. But as far as a program, the Michigan team itself, they're in about as good of a situation as you can be, almost as polar opposite of the Spartans as you can be as well. So definitely a collision course here of two programs heading in different directions. I don't know how that necessarily affects the final score, but I think a lot of people have their assumptions, and we'll obviously see it play on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this all year, but it's pretty remarkable how healthy this team has been. And even when they've had some guys banged up, the guys that have came in and have played pretty well. So, I mean, I think they have realized that they have more depth than they maybe originally thought at some positions. Like, I mean, the secondary coming into the year is like, oh, my God, like, who's going to be the second cornerback? I mean, what happens if Will Johnson can't go, or the safeties or the linebacker? I mean, they've had multiple guys step into those positions and play really well. So it's things are rolling right now for them. And and for MSU, I mean, we've seen a quarterback switch here, and I mean, that's never really a good sign midway through the season. I mean, I think it was this past week, right, Matt, that that Hauser took over the starting job from Noah Kim, and will become MSU's first second year quarterback to start against Michigan since Jeff Smoker in 2001.
You were correct on all of that. So, yeah, Noah Kim won, you know, Peyton Thorne, two-year starter, transferred out after spring practice. He's now at Auburn. Noah Kim beats out Caden Hauser and true freshman Sam Levitt for the job in fall camp. You know, some positive things the first 2 weeks. He was the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week in a week two win. And then it just hasn't worked out. In the three games that followed, he had six interceptions against only one touchdown pass. He was on the field for 35 offensive possessions. Only one of those was a touchdown drive. So with the bye week, the staff made a change. They went to Caton, and he's a former four-star kid from California. He had been committed to Boise, flipped to Michigan State late in the process. He appeared in one game as a true freshman last year, and redshirted, and then this year, you know, he showed some things at Rutgers. I was actually impressed. You know, you go on the road making your first career start as a redshirt freshman, you really haven't gotten that much playing time against a good defense in the rain, and he looked strong at the start. I mean, they got the ball to start, marched right down the field for a touchdown. That was the first score they've had at all on an opening possession of a game this year. You know, same thing in to start the second half, first possession right down the field. Those are two of probably the best drives they've had all season. So you liked what you saw at times, but, you know, he got away with a few. He could have been picked off twice easily, probably, maybe a third time. There's one there as an offsides, and so it was a free play. Whether or not he actually knew it was a free play, I don't know, but the ball ended up being picked off, but it didn't matter. He recovered his own fumble on a fourth down, and that got a first down out of it, so got away with some things you probably won't get away with against Michigan, given the quality that they have on that side of the ball. But, you know, so some promise for him. He's a bigger quarterback than Noah. He's got a strong arm, obviously. He had a couple of really nice – some really nice throws. But, you know, he had two completions where his receivers then fumbled the ball. And those were both killer turnovers. So he ran for a score. They dialed up a little more QB runs for him, and you know, bigger guys, so he can absorb a little more contact. And so, yeah, there are things to like about what you saw from him. But, you know, still a young guy, still developing, and, you know, it's gonna be quite a challenge. You know, he played at St. John Bosco out there, so, you know, a big time high school program. But, you know, this is Saturday night under the lights, national TV against maybe the best team in the country. So going to be a lot of pressure on him, and we'll see how he responds. But he seems to have a bright future.
You just kind of get the sense that if MSU turns the ball over more than once, that they just really probably won't have any chance in this game. I mean, Michigan has really been good at forcing turnovers, especially recently. And you can see how much that can switch momentum. And even for like MSU last week against Rutgers, I mean, thinking you're in control, and then some mishaps, and all of a sudden it's you find yourself behind on the scoreboard in the game you were in control. So, yeah, it just seems like if there's any turnover issues for MSU at all on Saturday, it's probably going to be game over.
I would have to agree with that. Again, you know, repeating the same stuff, margin for error is basically nothing against, you know, Rutgers or Iowa. Against Michigan, yeah, it's even, you know, it's even a thinner line, I guess you would say. But yeah, they can't, they just can't afford to turn over the ball. They have, if there is any, I mean, we'll get into keys later, but the number one key, obviously, it is for pretty much every team every week, but especially so in this case, is winning the turnover battle. They haven't been doing it, and that will be absolutely critical on Saturday.
I was just going to say, I mean, Michigan had two interceptions in against Nebraska a few weeks ago, and it was game over by the end of the first quarter. So I think turnovers are key. I mean, Michigan likes forcing them. They've done a good job. 9 interceptions in 7 games. Michigan State's obviously, as you said, is prone to turning the ball over. So I think, you know, if they can get through that early in the game, I think, you know, you can try and muck it up and make it competitive. But if Michigan gets the football, it's game over.
Probably the biggest storyline heading into Saturday is if there will be any carryover from last year's tunnel incident where multiple MSU players assaulted 2 Wolverines that led to charges being pressed, some heated words from both sides afterwards. But a year has passed, and I mean, I guess can each of you give us a temperature check on both sides heading into Saturday in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I guess from the Michigan side, they've kind of said all the right things this week. They've basically tried avoiding the questions about the tunnel stuff. You know, they've made it the focus. They made Saturday the focus as opposed to talking about everything else. You know, it's probably the right way to go. You know, behind the scenes, I'm sure it's a little bit of a different situation. You know, I did ask edge rusher Jalen Harrell earlier this week about it, and he kind of smirked and laughed. And when I asked if they were still talking about it, and he said, no, not really. I got to think they are, but they're trying to keep under wraps because here, look, the reality of the situation is Michigan has a lot more to lose here than Michigan State does, right? A loss would certainly cost Michigan the Big Ten, you know, in the Big Ten race. It would certainly dampen their hopes of getting in the Big Ten championship and getting in the playoffs. So they desperately need to win this game. And I think the coaches this week are trying to get that idea through to the players. Like, yes, it is a rivalry. Yes, you know, you necessarily don't have to forget what happened last year, but you can't let it cost you in the dumb decisions, whether it's penalties or off the field curricular activities, everything else, because you know, this is just one game. It just counts for one win or loss. Not to sound cliche, but Michigan has bigger and better things on the horizon in their eyes. So not a ton of smack talk from the Michigan side, as you'd probably expect. You know, they're taking a business-like approach to this. Jim Harbaugh did have some complimentary things to say about Michigan State, as he usually does every year. He has heard, he reached out to his former assistant coach, Willie Taggart, on Harlan Barnett, had some good things to say about him. So he spoke highly of Barnett's character and everything else. So right now, Michigan's kind of taking this, as a business-like tunnel vision, I guess would be a good way to say it. Not a ton coming out of the Michigan side.
Yeah, similar on the side. I mean, they wouldn't have any reason tunnel, even aside from the tunnel, Michigan State would obviously not have any reason to be, you know, providing bulletin board material given the current situation. But yeah, I mean, they've, you know, Harlan said, you know, that was last year, we moved on, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, 11-on-11 on the field, and there's plenty of opportunity to get after them there. Players have said the same thing, you know, that's in the past. So, and you know, of the 7 guys that were criminally charged, there's only 3 of them that are even potentially available on Saturday, because Jacoby Windman's out for the season due to injury. Kari Crump, who swung the helmet, he remains suspended for, you know, the Big Ten, suspended for the 8 games this season. 2 others are no longer on the team. So you have defensive back Angelo Gross and defensive ends Brandon Wright and Zion Young are the only 3 that would even potentially be available on Saturday. And so, yeah, I mean, there's not much to say. But to Aaron's point, I would have a very hard time believing that behind closed doors, that is not a topic of discussion amongst the Michigan players. And I don't know what Michigan State would be saying about it behind the scenes, but yeah, I am hoping for a game that is left on the field and not the things that we've dealt with in recent years, whether that was the pregame dust up in 2018 or any of the other stuff like last year. And if we're worried about when the Big Ten decides to level public reprimands or fines in the coming week, it's going to be unfortunate.
Agreed. 100% agreed on this side as well. And I must point out, too, the two players that were involved in the Michigan side last year. One of them is no longer on the team, obviously, Jamon Green, who declared for the NFL draft. And the other, Jaden McBurrows, has been inactive most of the season. So you're probably not going to see, you're definitely not going to see Jamon Green. You probably won't see McBurrows at all either Saturday. So, like you said, that may help cool things down a little bit when those involved aren't there. But nonetheless, it is hanging over, you know, certainly hanging over Michigan. I'm sure it's hanging over both teams. And, you know, you got to think one little spark may do something. We just hope it doesn't get to that point.
Well, let's touch on the MSU program a little bit too. I mean, it's obviously been a tumultuous season with Mel Tucker. I mean, what do you think the future of this program is and how that might affect this rivalry moving forward?
Well, I'm out of adjectives to use to describe, so anybody who wants to throw a few my way, I could use a suggestion. Yeah, I mean, it's just been a disaster of a fall, you know. After an expected 2-0 start, you know, USA Today early morning hours released a report about with the accusations against Mel Tucker by Brenda Tracy, alleging, sexual misconduct. Later that day, he's suspended without pay, and then 2 weeks later, he's fired for cause. And now this is where the lawyers step in and make a bunch of billable hours, and that will be the foreseeable future, because Mel is going to sue over the nearly $80 million remaining on his contract, and then there's some other stuff in the courts to keep me busy. But yeah, I mean, this is a big moment. You know, they thought they had, you know, they thought they had a guy, you know, 2 years ago. You mentioned this is unbeaten top 10 teams coming into East Lansing, as much hype for that game as I can recall in a long time. And it lived up to it. It was a great game. You know, it was a wild day in East Lansing. They rallied. Kenneth Walker has an all-time performance. And the next thing you know, Mel Tucker's getting a 10-year, $95 million contract that's fully guaranteed. And 2 years later, he's gone. You know, it is crazy how quick things change. It feels like forever ago. But, you know, this is a very important hire, obviously. You know, you need your football program to be good. They have the money. You know, how much the big-time donors, your Matt Ishbias of the world, you know, are going to pony up this time around, I don't know. We'll see, as far as their say or their opinion in the matter in Alan Heller's search. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of names that are out there. I'm not going to even – I won't even get into where that would be going, but they need to make a good hire. I mean, ideally, Alan's got a short list of candidates. He's working behind the scenes, and they have a coach in place by very late November, very early December, before the first signing day, so that coach can salvage what they can of the recruiting class and go from there. So – I don't know. I didn't expect this to be another coaching search, fall, winter, whatever. But that's just where they're at. And, but you know, this is still a good job. You know, this is, you know, it's a Big Ten job. It's, you know, the facilities are there. They just completed a nearly $70 million renovation of the football building, which will be named after Tom Izzo. And then, you know, they were paying Mel $9.5 million a year. There's money there. You know, the Big Ten, obviously, with the TV, you know, deal and you know, with the expansion, it's a very attractive job. The situation is difficult, obviously, given what has happened. You have an interim president, you have a board of trustees that does not have the best track record with staying out of things. So tricky, but it's still a good job that they should be able to find a very high quality coach to replace Mel.
And with Mark D'Antonio on staff right now too, I mean, do you think that gives them any sort of, I don't want to say advantage, but benefit for preparing for this game at all, or is it kind of moot at this point?
I mean, if there's anybody that can get a Michigan State team fired up as an underdog against Michigan, I can't think of anybody better than Mark D'Antonio. I mean, that's what he made his name on in this. You know, I mean, he did things at Michigan State nobody thought were possible, including, you know, flipping the rivalry. You know, he won 8-10 at one point in time. And yeah, he, you know, he's back out of a 3-year retirement as associate coach. We talked to him, I think, the week he started, And, you know, he had said, you know, he's basically sees it as more of an advisory role to Harlan, who was his longtime assistant. He's said, you know, I'm not in there doing X's and O's. You know, it takes a while to even get up to speed on the scheme and stuff that they had installed. So he's more of that, I think. You know, when Harlan, you take over a program in a snap, and he's never been a head coach, there are a million things going on. And to have somebody there that knows what it's like, and, you know, that I could see obvious benefit to that. Whether he says something this week, I don't know. Harlan called it his secret recipe, or not recipe, secret formula or whatever, that he couldn't share. Trey Mosley, a fifth-year senior who was played for D'Antonio in 2019, said, you know, he's kind of – Mark's kind of the behind the scenes guy in the shadows taking notes. He said he hadn't said anything. He hadn't given a big pep speech, you know, yet, but he said he would expected something from Mark before the game this week to get him fired up. So would not be surprised in the least if that happened.
All right. Let's get into close up here with keys to victory and prediction. I mean, how are you guys thinking this game plays out? And as I guess for MSU side, I mean, you kind of touched on this earlier, Matt, but what needs to go right for them to hang around and at least maybe have a shot in the fourth quarter?
I mean, in short, they basically have to play a almost flawless game. But, you know, again, you can't have any mistakes. You got to win the turnover battle. You can't keep, you know, these critical errors. Got to go, you know, obviously win the turnover battle, basically almost penalty free. Caden Hauser is going to have a great game, and he's going to have to be efficient. That's most important, which I thought he was for the most part against Rutgers. You know, he can't make mistakes. He's just got to do what they ask him to do, which will require, obviously, help from his teammates, good play calling. The run game always is important. They have Nathan Carter has been a good addition from UConn, and Jalen Berger he missed a few games due to injury. He's getting healthier. We saw him last week more than we'd seen him since week two. Was running pretty hard. And then defensively, yeah, I mean, the same old things. You know, you can't let Michigan just bully him on the ground, and you got to force JJ to pass. And obviously he's a very good quarterback. They got good receivers. So, yeah, I mean, basically they have to play the best game they played all year and win the turnover battle, win in the trenches, and that'll give you a chance. Easier said than done, obviously.
Aaron, what are you expecting from the Michigan side?
I'm really curious to see what the game script is going to be for Michigan. I think ultimately for them, it comes down to sticking to it, right? Like not turning the ball over, not making mistakes, controlling, you know, the clock, you know, playing their type of ball. But I'm really curious to see how much they like unleash JJ. You know, Jim spent a good portion of earlier in the week praising his numbers, almost like thrusting him into the Heisman race. You know, he's moved up in recent weeks. He's played nearly flawless football, very efficient. He doesn't have the stats that some of these other national quarterbacks do, like a Michael Penix or a Dylan Gabriel or whatever the case may be. So part of me wonders if the Michigan offense is ready to kind of unleash him a little bit more through the passing game. You know, we've seen that in the past. I remember Michigan came out throwing, remember in 2021 when all they were doing was running the football. They threw the Andrew Anthony, that big play to open the game, and that's kind of how they got Michigan State off their toes, so to speak. So I think Michigan thinks they can win on the ground. Obviously, they've shown they can in the past, you know, the past couple of years with Blake Corum and the offensive line. But I do think JJ McCarthy is the key to this game. If he doesn't make many turnovers, it doesn't make many mistakes, doesn't turn the football over, I think Michigan wins this game rather easily. That being said, I do expect Michigan State to come out and try and punch him in the mouth early. Michigan's been prone to that in the past. We saw it last week against Indiana. We saw it a couple of weeks ago against Rutgers, where they go down 7-0 early and have to respond. Now, the response was just fine. In overtime, they ended up blowing both teams out. But I think Michigan needs to avoid that early. If they can do that, I think they win this game rather handily. Although I will point out, you know, we did put out our predictions earlier today at MLive.com, and I was the only one that went with Michigan State plus 24.5. So many of us are expecting a blowout. It wouldn't shock me if that happened, but I just think, you know, given the rivalry aspect, this game being in East Lansing, I do think Michigan State will come out motivated after last year. That I do think they, whether there's a backdoor cover or whatever the case may be, I do think this game stays relatively close. Four scores is just a lot. Nonetheless, I think Michigan wins this game rather handily, and by the end of it, there's no, you know, no gap there.
It will be interesting to see, because Michigan has been up so big in the second half in all seven games that their starters really haven't played in the fourth quarter at all this year. And I just wonder that this week, if they do have a big lead, if they kind of keep the foot on the gas a little bit more than they're accustomed to, and kind of just go for blood and maybe run up the score a little bit more than they usually would against other opponents. I mean, you got to try and get your guys in a full game eventually, because you would assume with Ohio State and Penn State coming up that you'll probably need to have your guys be able to play a full game. But I am curious to see how the personnel shakes out late in the game, if it is kind of lopsided, and if they continue to maybe kind of add on a little bit or call off the dogs and try not to escalate anything any further. But we shall see.
Then that's one thing both teams have in common. They're both looking to finish, really. So, I mean, Michigan hasn't, for opposite reasons, Michigan hasn't done it because they've been up by so many points. Michigan State hasn't been able to do it because they keep committing errors. But yeah, I mean, I could see, like we had talked about earlier, you know, the emotion, you know, Michigan State comes out, if they can get something going early, if it's a game in the second half, maybe, you know, maybe Michigan gets uncomfortable on the road. I don't know, but, you know, this is a veteran team. You know, I asked, you know, Harlan about, you know, personnel wise, you know, maybe same quarterback, same running back, big running backs, yada, yada. And he's like, well, yeah, that just means they're more experienced. So they're even better. So that's going to weigh in their favor. I just have a hard time seeing this being a competitive game late. I picked Michigan to cover. I know it's a lot of points, and I'm always leery of that, but I took them to win 38-13.
That's just it. I'm glad you brought that up, because Michigan had their backs haven't been against the wall yet this year. You know, and there were only really a handful of times last year where that happened. So Michigan hasn't been in that situation just yet. And I think if the Spartans can put them, you know, in that, whether it's late second quarter, early third quarter, where it's a one possession game and it kind of forces Michigan to pick up the pace, so to speak, I'd be really curious to see how they'd respond. They just haven't done it yet. So and obviously they don't want to do that, you know, and in fact, Blake Corum acknowledged it earlier this week, you know, that the knock against Michigan is they haven't played anybody and they haven't faced any adversity. And he made a good point. He's like, well, we don't have to, you know, we can put ourselves in a position where all these games are lopsided and we win easily. Ideally, that's probably what Michigan wants to do, but I got to think MSU's going to come out ready to go. How long that lasts, I don't know. It certainly helps, you know, this game is being played in East Lansing and it is on grass, a field that Michigan struggled at in the last couple of years. So we'll see. I'm really curious to see the script, as I was saying about Michigan.
Regardless of what happens on the field on Saturday, we will have extensive coverage at MLive.com/Wolverines and MLive.com/Spartans. Throughout the post game and leading up to Saturday as well. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again after the game.